Oh, hey, Kate.
Hello there, Ryan. Hello there, Ryan. Hello there, Ryan. Okay, I'll stop. I'm sorry.
I feel like that was a fairly lackluster attempt at a song to begin the
I know. There was an undercurrent of sadness to it.
Sure. It's kind of a sad day.
I know.
I'm going to put this out later this afternoon, so
Oh,
it's
really? So it'll go out then.
yeah, so it'll be rather relevant, but I think everybody woke up to the news that Anthony Bourdain committed suicide. I didn't get a sense of when the timeline was. It's just when I read the article this morning. And then Kate Spade, was it a couple days ago?
Yep.
And of course you see the sort of ripple reaction through social media, which is always a little belabored.
The whole I so my first reaction to that deluge of responses is like, fuck you. If I see one more, if you need help, reach out. Here's a hotline number. You know what? Fuck you, man. Like, and here's why I say that. It feels really hollow and vapid to me. And like, as somebody that's, living with mental health and mood disorder stuff, like, and I've been in a really good place for a couple of years. So I feel lucky, but I feel like it oversimplifies to just say, if you need help, just ask for help. As if somebody's gonna see that and be like, you know what, man, you're right. Thanks for that fucking post. Let me go reach out to a 1-800 number. Let me call Samaritans today. You know what? Maybe we need like a larger and more robust systematic structure that supports people. Maybe like you should just reach out to your friends who may be having a hard time and you know.
Or just reach out to your friends generally. Like, that's always I mean, there both has to be a systematic change in the way that institutionally people are able to access help because still mental health interventions, like you have to there's a pretty high bar for immediate help. If there's just like a moderate need for help, you might be waiting unless you have significant amounts of cash sorting laying around, you know? But then also there just has to be this like, and the yoga community is super guilty with all of this so blessed, so, you know, bullshit. You know, there just has to be an awareness that this affects a huge number of people. You know, we still sort of think of it as taboo to talk about mental health. And you know, I don't fundamentally know how to change that, but it's something that I think about a lot. And I mean, like, changes in the way that I interact with people that I care about. I don't know how we shift that on an individual level. Just trying to make it okay to talk about the fact that sometimes people are going through stuff. And, you know, even to just have one person that they could acknowledge that to, is really, really helpful. Even if it's not something that is as like super severe. So yeah, I don't know. But it is always unfortunate to hear about all of these things and then see people's, instead of like being able to sit with like the amount of sadness that is appropriate for two people that, you know, I didn't ever meet or personally know or really have a lot of connection to, then, you know, to get drowned out by like the reactivity cycle of Facebook is kind of meh, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to not, for me to not go to just, I was talking to Nick about anger, and he said, yeah, that surprised me a little bit about Anthony Bourdain. He's like, 'cause oftentimes people that manifest like anger like that, or brusqueness, that's it's like a container for it, and it externalizes some of that. It's like a release valve. So it can be like, while it can be dysfunctional, it can also be an indication that there's like an effective crutch in place. So I think his first response when I told him this morning was like, wow, I wouldn't have guessed that, because oftentimes that kind of thing is turn, when people aren't that kind of angry, they're turning it inward. And those are the people that you see. And then Nick and I looked at each other, and we're like us, like we're both like constantly, our release valve often manifests as being like angry and quippy about that kind of thing. So it was interesting on that level too, but yeah, and the yoga community's response to that, like there's only a few ways that it's like okay to be, and then we're shocked when people are like, I don't want to be that way. And we live in a culture that's like, here's how you can succeed. Here's a super narrow pathway for you to exist as a human being and be successful. And it's so tied to economy. And then we wonder why people are depressed and anxious when they don't fit, the mold of somebody that can actually do 40 hours of work a week and then more. And then we have very little infrastructure in place. And like you said, care is neither accessible nor affordable. And people in the mental health community are getting paid shit, so they start taking only private clients, the really good ones. And the really good ones that do take insurance still only take limited, so they're really hard to get into.
Well, and also I mean, it's on the insurance company's side because very few insurance companies will, like, there's very high, every insurance that I've ever had has been different, but there's always some like barrier in which it's like, no, you can't see that therapist anymore. And then the therapist has to intervene and write a bunch of letters and that's a little certainly I mean, I would hope that especially with changes to the just how we're perceiving medicine, that that would change slowly over time. But even if the doctors recognize that that might be a helpful preventative and health measure, it doesn't mean that the insurance companies, you know, get wise to that, because it's not as clear of a of an outcome for them. But I don't know. It's a very tricky It's a very tricky thing.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to pivot off of
No, I don't. I don't either.
that. Like, I just don't know how to pivot off of that.
Man.
You know the other the a thing that comes up around that too that I'm seeing a lot of is there's a lot of talk, especially around the concept of meditation, where it's there. I don't know where when this became a thing, but you know when people started talking about like hacking in terms of like life hacking as opposed to like a
Yes.
purely digital construction. And now I'm seeing things like brain hacking referring to meditation. And I just feel like I have to put out a public service announcement that meditation is not about hacking your brain. It's not you can't you can become really, really familiar with the patterning of your own consciousness, and maybe over time, over a very long period of time, you could make a shift in some of your habitual patterns. But you're not going to get that from an app. You're not going to get that from a like 3-day course. Like you just I don't know. You just have to sit. If meditation is the route you want to go with that, right? Like there are tons of other therapies that are very, very specific about like changing habits. But just sitting on a cushion and doing shamatha doesn't necessarily do that. It might. It could help you with that, but it's just this, it's just the new, it seems to be the new way to like people got tired of talking about mindfulness, so now we're brain hacking. You know, like it's just,
Yeah, and it's a super interesting terminology too.
yeah.
Like it first of all, it implies that they're
You're otherizing your brain, your intellect, first of all.
Yeah, and hack has like a little bit of a connotation of like break to fix, or
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I can see that.
yeah, I'm gonna repurpose this. I'm
Yeah.
gonna I'm going to break in. There's an element of destruction to it. Like just subtly,
Yeah.
that's interesting to me. And I'm super guilty of it. I think I built some ads this week. They weren't about meditation, but I've used that because it is sort of like a clickable term right now. Uh-oh.
Sorry, I just lost you there for a second. What was the last thing you said? You still there? There you are.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Either peeing or pouring tea. I can't tell.
Oh, I was just pouring some coffee.
I said I'm guilty of making some ads that have used the term hack because I think it's like the term du jour.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, there's something to be like, if that get if your real intention is to get people in the door, I suppose that's okay. But we also, I don't know, that like it's just getting people into the in the door argument is always a little bit fraught for me because it's like, okay, but the way that you advertise the thing that you're trying to get them in the door about automatically is setting the view of the thing that you're teaching. And the view, at least of meditation, you know, and I would be as bold to say across any traditions and schools is one of either, you know, in the Shambhala terminology, we talk about basic goodness, You might talk about bodhicitta. You might talk about essence if you like, or purusha if you like, if you're a Patanjali type person. But that's the view. And to me, hacking doesn't necessarily fit into that view.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But again, you know, like, people can be skillful in whatever ways they feel it's right to be skillful. It's come up a bunch in the past week or so. And it's also responsible for... It also perpetuates the thing that's been happening for ages, which is, you know, people come in for their first meditation class. We sit for a very modest amount of time, maybe like 6 minutes, just to sort of give instruction. And the first thing that someone will say indefinitely is, I just couldn't clear my mind. And it's like, well, okay. The object isn't to clear the mind. You might experience clarity or a slowing down of your thoughts at some point, but that's not the point. The point is to sit with what is. And if what is an anxious, flustered mind, well, you kind of just sit with an anxious, flustered mind, which is why the practice doesn't work if you're just trying to do it for an hour every Sunday. Like, I'd rather someone say, like, I'm going to sit and be quiet for 6 minutes a day. And I bet that person would find more benefit from the practice than...
And Ryan, this harkens back to the freaking mental health discussion. Everything is about fixing.
Yeah.
You know, and improving. And I have to clear my mind. I have to do this. I have to achieve this. I have to get this. I have to acquire this. And it's like, well,
I saw some.
Well, what if you just are?
Yeah. I saw some other thing that was, some yoga teacher posted about, you have the right to be able to fix yourself.
Oh, like, what does that mean?
And she's someone who does all of the, like, yoga tune-up and cross-training yoga and CrossFit and all of this. You know, she's in that world. And it's like, you know, you have the right to care for yourself. But, like, there may be situations that arise where you're not able... to caring for yourself is acknowledging that you can't do the things that you once did. For instance, if you had a knee replacement, you might not have the same range of motion that you did before. Even once it's all healed, the range of motion might be a little bit less than when it wasn't, you know, a new knee in there, right? So is using what range of motion you have and being out of pain, is that fixing yourself? No, you're caring for yourself, but you have to acknowledge that, like, okay, I have an artificial knee in there, and, you know, I'll probably be able to regain a good amount of what I had before, and hopefully in a less painful way, but, like, I have to, you know, hold in reality that that's something that has happened to me. You know, if someone, like, what is the thing we're trying to get ourselves back to? Is it being able to lift heavy things over our head? Is it being able to, you know, just work 40 hours a week? Like, that's the other questionable thing in terms of the mental health thing that I always think about is, you know, if the object is to get someone to feel like they have a ability to relate to society and be a quote-unquote productive member of said society. If productive member means being miserable at a job for 40 hours a week, I'm not... like, there's a lot of fucked up shit about our society. So, like, where's the thing we're trying to fix? Like, where's the marker of fixed? There is none. So it just always kind of... It irks the fuck out of me.
Why don't we teach... I want to teach a workshop called It's Okay. It's Okay to Be Broken.
Yeah. I'll do that with you. I'll do that with you.
Okay. So this is a little tangential, but somehow related.
Okay, great.
I took class the other night. It was such a good class. Ah, it was wonderful. It was with Nicole. I'm so excited that my schedule works in such a way now that I can regularly get to her class, which is so awesome. And you're going to need to talk me through this, but I'm going through a thing where with mountain pose.
Tadasana. Okay.
Yeah. Where, when people come into Tadasana and then externally rotate their arms and roll their palms forward. Mm-hmm. And stand with feet together, stiff and militant.
Mm-hmm.
I have just like, I feel feelings.
You feel feelings? Yeah, I feel feelings too about that.
Okay, so the origin of the shape in my practice is my teachers never. That's a lie. The teachers I went to and respected never cued that. Never cued, okay, this is what I want you to do. Bring your feet together. Open up your hands. Give each finger a line of cocaine and shine your palms to me.
Can you please give that set of instructions? Give each finger a line of cocaine. That's amazing. You dropped out again.
I don't know what's going on. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I know that there's a quote unquote history to that particular alignment for Tadasana. Why?
Okay. Do you want me to, first of all, I don't actually think that they're, you know, that if what you mean by history is that
in light on yoga, is that what Tadasana looks like in light on yoga?
Oh, actually, that's a really good question.
Let's look.
Do you have your light on yoga around? Because mine is not currently at my desk because I think someone borrowed it. Certainly in pictures of there are definitely pictures, I believe, of Krishnamacharya and I believe of Patabi Joyce as a young man in that sort of very stylized Tadasana.
Yeah, I found it. So in light on yoga, feet together, hands by the side, palms in, hands sealed together like lobster claws, and
with
like,
the thumb pointing forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's there are sort of two so my teacher always talks about Tadasana being a couple of things. One, it's a posture of rest and ready. And two, it is a neutral reference. So yes. The problem with having your arms spun out from that point of view is, first of all, a lot of people aren't actually externally rotating their arm bones. They're just turning their palms forward. They're just supinating. But if you take your forearm and you supinate it to its max by the side, then there is no such thing as supination. Because you can't go further than that, right? So everything from that point of view is then pronation. Does that make sense? So thumbs forward, biceps forward, which is the neutral description that my teacher uses, like the big head of the bicep forward, is a reference point because from there I can tell if I supinate my forearm and my bicep stays pointing forward, then I've just really supinated my forearm. If I externally rotate my arm and my thumb turns out, that's a slightly different action. I didn't supinate my forearm at all. I just externally rotated in the shoulder socket. And then that's even further complicated by the fact that most people, in order to do that, draw their shoulder blade into their spine. So there's actually probably less external rotation than they think is happening, and more they're just repositioning the shoulder socket to point more in a lateral position. But that is not a position of rest for my arm. It's a choice that I can make, but it's not a position of rest. So, and then furthermore, I find that the feet together also being a choice is can be a useful choice. But it definitely doesn't give me it, especially at the beginning of class, a sensation of rest. It is very very much an active pose. And then yeah, I just It's
Okay,
not,
so
yeah, go ahead.
we're in agreement.
Yeah.
I want to scratch a little bit deeper into the anger I feel about. Maybe anger is not quite the right word, but I don't know, the strength of response I have internally when people come into that, and then the teacher presents an alternative to be experienced in the shape, and they don't listen.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not talking even about my teaching. Because it
Yeah.
definitely happens to me. Like, whenever I see that, I'm like, what? Where did you all learn? Where did everybody learn this?
Yeah.
Why is there such a gripping around it? Like, a gripping within it and then a gripping around it? Like, I refuse to let it go. This is
Yeah.
Tadasana. This is the correct way to do it. Don't you know? Well, of course, I've seen a couple of pictures and that's what people were doing. Like, if I wanted you to work on some, like, subscapular muscle, and like, yeah, let's do that thing with your arms.
Yeah. Oh, well, there's a, I mean,
But it's not that it's not useful. It's but
exactly.
it's
But
and it's not that it's
as a
bad.
starting point, you know, that's why I really like that description of Tadasana as a position of rest and ready. Because it immediately kind of debunks any of this kind of strong, stiff engagement in Tadasana. And you know, also embedded within that is like there are people for whom their unique anatomy is gonna make their Tadasana look very, very different. Like a thing that I like to do is have people close their eyes and organize themselves in a Tadasana that feels stable, and then to actually take a look at what they're doing with their legs. Like that's super, super, super interesting to see the variance on, especially internal external rotation. Of the thigh bones, and like where their toes end up being pointed. Oftentimes, there's an asymmetry to that when they feel like they're balanced. And you know, I try to be really clear that the only reason why we might say, you know, knees and toes pointing forward is because that's just so that everyone's starting from the same page. It may very well be that for you, a slight turnout is okay, as long as you're conscious that that's what you're doing, right? that's the value of knowing anatomy and biomechanics, is you're aware of all of your choices. It's not that it inherently makes you safer or have a better quote unquote pose. It's that you actually have a sense of like, oh, these are all the choices that I have. I could be really engaged in Tadasana. I could be really relaxed in Tadasana. I could be somewhere in the middle. But that takes a long time to explain in the context of
I know. And so it brings me to my next point, which is like, that's why sometimes Sanskrit is not useful. You know, sometimes it's better to just say, stand at the top of your mat. All right, now let's explore standing.
Sure.
Because as soon as you say Tadasana, everyone's like, coke out my hands, coke them out.
I don't know, maybe I might not be, like, I would have a feeling that if I were teaching at Down Under, if I were teaching at Yoga Works, that I would have a different opinion on that, but if I have a room full of like, 15 people at Bow Street, and I say Tadasana, I might have one person doing that stylized alignment, but I would bet you that they're a new person to the studio. So I might be a little, it's been a while since I've had to have that discussion with a room of people.
Yeah, maybe that could be part of it too. I noticed it at both studios. And I think maybe I'm seeing it more now because there's different, there is a beautiful thing that happens at Down Under with cross lineages, you know, if I'm going to use that word, like where people practice primarily in a particular school, but then they hop into another style, you know, so they're taking with them remnants. Like, for example, there are a couple times at the end of a class I taught where people were applauding. And I was like, what's going on? Like, why are people applauding?
Oh, do they applaud in the Baptiste classes?
But they applaud in Baptiste. And they were coming to my heated flow, and they did. And I thought, you know, it was so kind, you know? But there was also a part of me that's like, oh, man, that made me uncomfortable because I was taught we don't do that. And, like, I have not just performed something.
Yeah.
You know, we had an exchange. So I would only feel fair if I also applauded them, you know, like,
yeah.
But, you know, my point of that is because I think that there is, you know, there's bigger fish to fry than a group of people.
Sure,
applauding.
Sure, sure.
There's absolutely a sweetness to it. My point is like these little subtle ticks that we take with us from quote unquote style or lineage to lineage. And that can be even much smaller than lineage and just be teacher to teacher. You know, you have one teacher that says low lunge is this, one teacher says low lunge is that. You know, Anjaneyasana for some is the back knee is lifted, for others back knee is down. It is what it is. But I am interested in where I'm at psychologically to turn it back to me in case you were worried we were veering too far away from my personal experience. I find it very curious that certain things will like press my buttons.
Yeah.
And then they go away and I don't care about them and they shift, you know? Yeah. And right now it's Tadasana. And I think it inherently ties back to what we were talking about earlier with the feeling of using yoga to correct and achieve and continual pursuit of unlimited mobility and strength and performance that I am really, really resistant.
Yeah.
Too, and so resistant to that there are times where I'm like, I'm not worthy of the seat of a teacher, and I don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah.
Because I cannot, you know, I slam home the messaging as best I can in my classes, but, you know, sometimes it goes through and sometimes, you know, people just hate me for it. And,
yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Not everybody has to love me. I don't love every teacher I've taken. I respect everyone, but like,
yeah.
I think it cuts right to the core of feeling, of that feeling of fraudulence about what we're all doing.
Yeah.
And it's all wrapped up in that one shape.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of fraudulence, I've had the self-practice intensive all week, and it's been really interesting watching myself be like, the most skillful thing here is not to teach. Like, is to really just hold the container, especially at this point of the week, and just let them practice on their own. And certainly go around, and I'm at this point, you know, basically what I did was I wrote out a template, which is sort of an evolution of that old practice lab manual that you probably have floating around somewhere.
I still do.
There are much fewer actual poses mentioned in this version of the template. It's more just a way to track through. And you know, I've been trying to remind everybody all week, if you get curious or inspired to go down some rabbit hole of exploration, fuck the template. Follow that. And then when you're like, I don't know where I am anymore, then use the template to be like, oh, okay, I'm just going to finish up practice and call it a day. My instinct has been to like, oh, I should be teaching them more. I should be teaching them more. And it's like, no. The purpose of this week is just to give them a useful template for self-practice and give them multiple opportunities and little tweaks in that template or things to consider each time we iterate it out. And then have discussions about their experience afterwards. And it's actually been really hard to just sort of sit there and be like, I'm just gonna hold this space here and not say anything. Because certainly there are times where I'm, you know, especially towards the beginning of the week where I was like, you know, I should probably go and work on that particular form with that particular person, the one that they're engaged in at the moment. But I'm like, no, that's not the point here. There's plenty of other time to work on, like, the specifics of the form. So I'm just going to let people have their experience for the most part. Unless I'm seeing something like, no, we need to have a discussion, you know?
Like Tadasana.
Yeah, no, not like Tadasana. Because these are for the most part people who have been doing the year-long course with me, so...
I'm kidding. Anyways.
But yeah. You know, it is super... I don't know, it's... I kind of go back and forth on this. There are days where I'm like, you know, what the hell am I doing? Like, I, you know, should just, you know, stop teaching... blah, 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 until I know what I'm doing. And then there are other times where I'm like, you know what? That is so deeply flawed, especially because so many other people are taking that approach. So many other people are just stepping away. As much as I wish I had the time and money to step away and go, you know, practice like twice as much as I'm able to now. I think we all just have to go in and be honest about like, this is what I'm working with now. This is what I think now. It will evolve over time because I'm constantly examining what I'm doing. And you know, that's just the truth of trying to teach this thing. And you know, that actually can often be the problem with quote unquote method, is that when the person who originated the method dies, the method immediately becomes stagnant. It ceases to evolve. Especially if the people trying to hold that particular method or that particular lineage refuse to let it evolve in deference to the person who originated it, right? And you see this conflict all the time, you know, especially with something like in the world of body work and things like that. It's a really interesting thing to watch people go through. Because the truth of the matter is we learn more shit over time. Especially in regards to you know, I think of the first time I ever went to a Rolfing practitioner and never wanted to go back ever again because it was so fucking painful. It was good, but it was just so fucking painful. And when I went back to do a 10 series maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, I was so shocked because it was a completely different experience. And I asked her, I was like, what, like, when did you train? Because this feels like something distinctly different than my experience of multiple 10 series prior to this. And she was like, you know, we've just realized that, you know, the amount of force that was used in the method previously might not have been the best approach. Gradual change is better. And the amount of change that we can actually make with our own, you know, effort as a body worker is minimal. Valuable, but minimal. And I was like, oh wow, that's a refreshing update to the to my experience of that method. I who knows if that's shared across, but across the people who are practicing it, but you know, yeah, I don't know how I got off on that tangent. Bring me back, Kate.
Oh, so pride. No, but seriously, I'm sort of bummed out because I've always wanted to go get beat up real good.
Yeah. You can go find someone to go get beat up real good. You just gotta go find it like an old school person. There are a few around. I can give you names.
Okay.
So actually, I want to talk about Pride next week, post
Okay,
Pride.
fine, fine,
But I
fine.
want to know about your last class at Back Bay.
Oh, thank you. Ryan, I'm having feelings.
Yeah. Did you cry?
No, I didn't. I think the gift of my last class was that there was a scheduling fuck up. And so I had like put a social media post and like told all my regular students my last class will be on this day. And then my body wasn't updated, so I wasn't on the schedule. And people thought I was like gone.
Oh
And
no.
then yeah, and you know, I was angry about that because you know,
I would have been angry about that too.
I worked in that space for a long ass time.
Yeah.
You know, for almost 7 years. And you know, one of my first classes sober was in that room. And you know, I took my first class with Nicole Clark. I took my teacher training. Like that room, you know, is important to me. And we had gone through effort to like pick out a date that was not a holiday so that, you know, people could come.
Yeah.
And so for it to be fucked up felt like such a reminder that they don't give a flying fuck
Yeah.
because they can't. And I did everything I could to leave in a graceful way. But it was hard to leave gracefully when I felt like it didn't matter that I was leaving at all. So I was kind of having to poke, and I hate having to poke. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like constantly having to ask for like basic things, or it is makes you feel like, it just knocks the wind out of your sails. It's hard to be creative in an atmosphere. It's hard to be like buoyant and excited when you're in an atmosphere of pure bureaucracy that is doing its best to maintain some semblance of the cool indie structure that was its predecessor. But it's, you know, and there's tons of opportunities, and there's lots. I'm sort of going off on a
lark
because I'm not there on the schedule regular, but like there's opportunities there for teachers for sure. There's some beautiful things happening there for sure. There's also some like really, really, really uncomfortable things happening.
Yeah.
There. And my exit was how it felt to me in my body was the perfect reminder that, wow, I think this was the right decision. The way I've felt treated upon leaving was like, oh, I'm not valued. It's okay. It's okay to let this go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had time to reflect over the last couple of weeks about a lot of things. And there are times where I felt guilty and like I second guessed because I left.
Yeah. You fell out again.
Hi.
There you go. Yeah.
So, if I reflect on the actual tangibles about that class and the intangibles that I loved, I love the way the light comes in the window. I love the people that walk in the room.
Yeah.
If list.
Yeah. You fell out again.
It's probably the universe telling me I'm saying too much. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Long story short, the last class itself was fine. I was exquisitely honest. And I ended class saying, you know, disclosing too much about personal stuff, as I usually do. And, I said goodbye to the room. And I had some emotional connections with a couple of regular students who won't be able to find me at the other place I'm going. But the studio, the people working at the desk didn't know or care.
Yeah.
And the current teacher manager, you know, was the one that the scheduling mistake happened because she's totally overworked. That's not her fault. They've put way too much on her. And, you know, so I left with sort of like a great big limp dick in my hand.
Fantastic.
You know, I could have found a better analogy, but
I get what you're saying. That's yeah.
But that was the limp was from Yoga Works. The joy was from the students.
Yeah.
Like I left with a beautiful exchange with the students, but the institution was disinterested.
Totally. Yeah. I don't know. Like I'm just reflecting back on my last class there, which was really
beautiful.
It was really, really lovely.
I was there. I loved it.
Yeah. A lot of people were there. It was really very sweet. But I think at that time, I don't know, you're right. There's a connection to the space. There's a connection to the students. But the second you like remove the person with the like at the what's the analogy I'm looking for? At the you remove the person in charge, but they're far much more than in charge. They're setting the tone of the full organization, right? It's a little like the space still has the resonance to a certain extent. The students certainly still have the resonance to a certain, but there's nothing, there's no like unifying vision of what's going on. And that's difficult to exist within. And knowing what they ask their teacher managers and their manager managers to do, you know, I don't know if I could ever, I don't know that I could ever walk back in that room to teach.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah, I don't know that I could ever walk into that room to teach again.
Do you understand, like, what a big thing to say that is? That's a big thing to say.
I mean, let me, as long, like, if, you know, they bailed and, like, Alex Kenny, like, figured out a way to, like, basically start the studio up from scratch again, as, you know what I mean? Like, then, yeah, sure, I would, but you know what I mean? But as, in, if, under the auspices of Yoga Works, I don't think that I could. I think I might have a different feeling if it was in some other room that was, you know, run by Yoga Works, but specifically there, I think I would have a tough time.
Yeah, you know, I get it. There's part of me that, you know, we had planned on me teaching a master's class or a, you know, an intensive a couple times a year, but I don't get the feeling that they even want that. Like, I feel like there's just like a sense of like, I hate you. Don't leave me.
Yeah.
I hate you. You know, yeah. And like, none of that is real because, you know, an organization doesn't have feelings like that. But, I don't know, Ryan. There was a really interesting conversation on Facebook between a lot of yoga teachers recently.
Yes, I actually commented on it, but my comment in true to form was, hey, Nicole, give me a call. Let's talk.
Yeah. And it was awesome to see. And like, I see the benefit of you doing that, but also like, you know, it would be nice if that conversation was like kind of public. You know, so people could have heard what you had to say.
Yeah, but people hear what I have to say on here.
Okay.
With a lot more context than a Facebook post. No. So, you know, what are you going to do? But you know, I think there is a, for those people who are not living in Boston necessarily listening to the podcast, in the past month, Yoga Works has acquired, two companies, one of which that had two studios in Boston and one of which that had three. So they added five more studios in Boston collectively. There's been a lot of I've had a number of people reach out and be like, I don't know what to think about this. And the truth is, I don't know what to think about it either, but I think we have to at least acknowledge that it doesn't, the people who are running those studios, both in Boston and in California, we've talked about this before, but there's this interesting thing where they try to make it like nothing's going to change. It is fundamentally changed. by the person who was in charge not being in charge anymore. There may be great things that change because of that. There may be things that are not so great. Either way, those studios have been around for a really long time, and so that change is hard. I mean, they've been around. Geez, I mean, I would assume that Piranha Power has been around for a long time. Maybe not as long as Back Bay had been around, but for a really long time. And same with Inner Strength. But I anybody who thinks that as either a yoga teacher that's not teaching at Yoga Works or a yoga studio owner, that these acquisitions don't affect you should really think again. Which is not to say that we should all, like, start a riot and run Yoga Works out of town. That's not what I'm saying. But the fact that there is a single company that owns 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what is it, 8 or 9 now?
Oh God. 1, 2, I don't know.
8 studios in the Boston area. That affects all of us. It might affect us all in really positive ways because people might be like, well, maybe I don't want to support that. But it also just affects how business is going to go down in Boston. And I think it's really interesting that on the Yoga Works website, there is actually a link that says sell my studio.
No.
At least as of last week. Let me confirm that that is an accurate statement. Their site takes
sell your studio. Here it is.
Yes.
Sorry, but the page you were trying to view does not exist.
Man, oh, mine went through. I have gotten a 404 error on it before, but looking to sell your studio? Are you a studio owner wanting to shed the headaches of day-to-day business operations? Maybe you want to get back to your passion for teaching and supporting the greater yoga community, or perhaps you're looking to move on to other projects altogether. Whatever path you're on, YogaWorks can offer a variety of options to support your personal goals while expanding possibilities for the community of students, teachers, and staff you have built. If you are interested in learning more about potential options or just want friendly advice about how to prepare your business for its next stage of evolution, please send us a message below. Rest assured that any of the information you share will remain completely confidential. Namaste, Rosanna. And the Yoga Works family. First of all, I question some of that. I would never just take their word for it that things will remain confidential. Because it didn't with Back Bay.
No, they told people?
No, there was, like, somebody, like, accidentally put up, like, a Craigslist ad looking for a manager, like, 8 months before the studio selling was actually, like, done.
Oh, God.
And so people were asking whether the studio was being, like, it just caused a hole. So, like, no, they didn't. They just tipped their hat perhaps a little too soon, which by definition makes it not confidential.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it changes the landscape.
It's
a lot of opportunities for new teachers, though, I'll say that much. And I don't think that's good or bad. I think it's good and bad.
Yes.
Because what they're doing is they're expanding at such a rapid rate that they now have to have a really huge sub list. So there is very little sense of walking into a studio that houses, you know, teachers that have been teaching longer than 6 months, you know? Yeah. And of course there are some incredible teachers there that have been teaching a very long time and we know who they are.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the sub list. I'm talking about a really, really, mile wide and inch deep bench, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what, and I see this time and time, like, the thing that I worry about, and it's already happening, and this is not necessarily YogaWorks' fault. I think it's actually not at all YogaWorks' fault. It's the broader direction of the yoga community. People that I know that have been teaching for, you know, a decade to 2 to 3 decades, they're all just being like, you know what? No, I'm not gonna do this anymore. And it's not just because of the money. Like, that's part of it. It's because they don't feel like they can actually teach something that's what they find to be valuable in their own practice. They don't know how to contextualize that within the modern yoga context. And these are people who are really skilled practitioners and really skilled teachers. Like, some of the best, like, certainly there are people who've been practicing for a long time that really have a great sense of how to practice yoga, but maybe are not very good at communicating it to other people. The people that I'm talking about who are stepping away, really, really skilled teachers. It's tough to watch them step away.
And is it because they're like, why are they really stepping away? They feel like they can't, their classes aren't successful enough to sustain.
No.
Then what?
They're stepping away because they feel like there's so much of a,
disconnect.
I don't want to put, words in people's mouths, but that they just, as a broad generalization, there's too much struggle in regards to what is expected from a yoga class and what they find is valuable to teach in the context of a yoga class. And they have an interest and an opportunity to do something else with their lives that seems like they could do much more good in that regard. So I get that totally. And like, if I felt like I really truly had an avenue that I could go that would do more benefit than teaching yoga asana, then I would probably run, but it's not that deep. It's not that clear. As in some of the people that I know, that they have a really clear sense of what's more valuable to do. And I'm sort of jealous of that. But it does make me just feel like, God, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want that to happen to, like, if we're just, there's this distinct drop-off point at the 10-year mark that, like, we need teachers who have been practicing for longer than 10 years.
I know.
Like, I'm almost there. And I fully understand the desire to run.
Oh my God. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm obviously farther away than you are to the 10 year of teaching, but I'm creeping up on like year 6.5. Mm-hmm. And I feel it, like, I don't feel it right now, but I feel it like
more generally.
And I feel it like most, not in terms of my specific classes. I don't feel it there. I feel it when I step back and look at the broader landscape.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's often how it starts.
Exactly.
But I think the decision to not be part of YogaWorks is helpful. I think working, if you have the choice to work for yourself or an independent, it is meaningful to make that choice. Just like if you're a frickin' book loving geek and you have the choice to work for,
absolutely,
you know.
And I wish
Brian Booksmith
I wish we would actually start framing it more like that.
You know, and sure, you can be creative to a point. Like, so here's my example. I used to work for Borders when Borders was a thing. And when I was just a wee sprig of a sprite, and we would, you know, and we were encouraged to drink at work. And no, that's not true. We were encouraged to have a little bit of creativity in our, staff picks.
Yeah.
You were allowed to pick up a couple things and make a small display of what you recommend reading, you know, but it was like small, and certainly they had a formulaic focus on what to present when and why. And there was scripted mapping and sequences of what books are displayed. Now, turn your attention to an independent bookstore, and what you have is not a place that allows you to have a small amount of books you recommend, but is dependent on you as a thinker and a reader to constantly talk about what you love and what you know. And those books are often from independent presses. So when you go to an independent bookstore, what you're seeing is a deeply idiosyncratic and edited, in the most thrilling, organic way possible, and a much more intellectual pursuit of what is available in publishing currently.
Yeah.
And you just can't get that when you walk into a McDonald's. You know, when you walk into a place where the chef is in the back saying, hey, this is local, this was cheap and delicious and high quality, I'm going to make this dish out of it today. Or you go to something where they brought a truck in with some frozen meat slabs.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with independent yoga studios. Like, there is freedom in programming that just doesn't exist. Or, you know what, that's not fair. It does exist in Yoga Works, but it requires a Herculean effort, and it is slow. It's like moving a ship, you know, whereas like an independent, and Dana Brigham, the owner of Brookline Booksmith, always used to say the benefit of being independent is you can turn and pivot on a dime.
Exactly. Well, it was like Lynn, when she came in, when I don't even remember what month was that. Was that April? She was talking with Rachel Torrado, who was the former manager of Back Bay with me, about going to Asana Charlestown. Within 3 hours, Rachel had texted me like, "Can you help me get this into Mindbody?" And we had the workshop up and running on the website, ready to go, to the point where Lynn was like, "Oh wait, is that was a done deal? Oh, okay, I guess I'm teaching." You know, you're able to really execute at a different level than having to go through all of these corporate checks.
Which means that you're directly responding to your immediate community's needs and desires.
Yes.
In a way that just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In other places, you get to look around your fucking neighborhood,
yeah,
and say, what do we want here?
Yeah. And it's and which is actually not to say that Yoga Works couldn't do that.
They absolutely could but they would have to have infrastructure in place that actually genuinely
they would have to
honored the local
end their entire business model in order to do that.
Or they would just have to have more people working for them that supported local.
Yeah.
You know, so the business model, I don't even think they would have to change their business model entirely. They just have to free up funding for local people. And so that's the other good thing. I'm going to say some nice things about Yoga Works. It's great experience for new teachers. You can just walk in and teach.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important. And it's also there's a lot of, you know, if a studio had shut down, you know, they're maintaining accessibility to yoga. I think that's valuable.
Yeah. And that's an important thing to note about the acquisitions is the plus side to the acquisitions is you know, if I could find absolutely no one else in the city of Boston to sustain Bow Street Yoga, I don't actually believe that would be true. I think I would be able to find someone locally to take it over if I ever needed to. I'm talking if there was a serious need, if I got sick, God forbid, or, you know, something happened. I don't know. I don't know what the situations with these other two studios that they just purchased were, but like, if it was a choice between shutting it down and having YogaWorks take over, I think it's good to just have YogaWorks take over. If those were the two options. Now, do I think everyone explores the option of getting someone local to do it? Probably not, because the payout's going to be so much less. But, you know, I think so much less. So much less. Let me reemphasize that. But, you know, I certainly would rather have these studios still be open than have them shut down entirely.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing with bookstores. I don't want Barnes & Noble to come and shut down independent bookstores, but if there's no bookstores in the area, I still want there to be books.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So, I don't know.
Okay. We should probably wrap this sucker up.
We could keep going, but I don't want to lose all my jobs.
Yeah, that's probably good. We should, however, let me triple confirm this here. I believe it is one Jay Brown's birthday today, according to the Facebook. So
happy birthday to you. I'm not gonna finish that, but happy birthday, Jay.
Keep going. No, come on.
No.
Happy
birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jay Brown. Jay Brown, Jay Brown. Happy birthday to you. That is all.
And what else? What do we have to do to close up? Oh, I am working on a new little project. New little podcasting project.
God damn it. You weren't supposed to say that much.
That's all I'm going
to
say.
Ryan sucks at the teaser. This is what he was supposed to say. He was supposed to pull it. He was supposed to pull a Jay Brown and say, guys, there's something I really want to tell you.
But I can't. I lost you again, Kate.
Damn it, it was right in the best part of my impression. I just want to say this. It's awesome. It's awesome. And I can't tell you.
That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. But you're right. I should have just let you tease it. But it, for the future, I'll let you be in charge of all of the advertising.
All right. So if you have comments, or questions or concerns, or there's topics you want to see us address, or if you would like to serve me with some sort of subpoena for something I've said, we can be reached at Unrolled Yoga.
unrolledpodcast@gmail.com, at unrolledpodcast on Instagram, unrolledpodcast.com, patreon.com/unrolledpodcast. Thanks to everybody who supports it. It is much, much, much appreciated. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Until next time. Bye.